Level up your LA Kings experience with the new Vivid Seats Elite Seats. All the on-ice Kings action with even more exclusive access. Enjoy great seats to the game along with premier dining inside the Lexus Club with all-you-can-eat food and non-alcoholic beverages. Plus, get a free Team LA Kings item and parking with your purchase. Score your Vivid Seats Elite Seats tickets today and earn rewards on each purchase from the only ticket company that rewards you for buying. Experience it live with Vivid Seats, the official partner of the LA Kings.
You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Kopitar, ahead, speed, space, Kempe in, shoots, scores! Upstairs!
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
Nice move, Kempe in, shoots, and scores! Oh, what great moves!
Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. Happy 2024, Kings fans. Since it's the first day of the new year, I wanted to sort of catch you up on where we are, where I am with All the Kings Men. As you may be aware by now, I'm also hosting the pregame, intermission, and postgame segments on iHeartRadio for the audio side of our simulcast. I've been enjoying it a ton, but it's taken me a while to sort out my time management skills, which were never that great to begin with, specifically when it came to preparing for each game, while also putting out two episodes of All the Kings Men every week. But I think I'm starting to figure out a method. So with that in mind, I want to get All the Kings Men back into a rhythm that feels a little familiar to me in the hopes that it'll make it more enjoyable for you. And I've been getting a lot of really nice comments from people when I bump into them about All the Kings Men, but I have to confess, I feel like I've been giving it a little bit of short shrift as I adjust to these new responsibilities. So with that in mind, I hope you enjoy this, our first Monday recap slash preview episode. Kings Realm podcast guys are here to help me crown a King of the Week. Then Jack Jablonski joins me to take a look at the upcoming games on this coming week's schedule. Happy New Year, Kings fans. Hope you enjoy it. Joining me now, two-thirds of the Kings Realm podcast, James Whitlock. How are you doing today, James?
Doing good.
And not Dennis. How are you doing today, Jordan?
I'm doing fantastic, and I just realized I forgot a beer. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's right. We're not. That's for your guys' show, not my guys' show.
Well, we obviously like to impose. So
sure. For those of you who don't know, the Kings Realm podcast is a podcast that records once a week, and usually it records late at night on Wednesday nights?
Wednesday nights, yeah.
And I'm usually staring at my laptop procrastinating. And then I get a little notification on Twitter that they're recording and I force my way into their show from time to time. But thanks for joining me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, absolutely.
So we're doing King of the Week. I've explained the rules to you. Everybody who listens should know the rules by now. So Jordan, we're going to start with you. Who's your honorable mention? I should point out the games this week were against, San Jose, Vegas, and Edmonton. 1-1-1 on the week for the Kings. So, Jordan, your honorable mention.
You know, I'm going to do, as my honorable mention, I'm probably going to piss off a few people here, but I'm going to go Pierre Dubois because he's been kind of turning on a little bit lately. I know the one goal against Calgary wasn't technically in this week. He did have the one goal against, I am blanking right now, I believe it was San Jose.
San Jose? Who didn't, though?
Yeah. That's true. That's fair. And then, you know, I think it was last night's game, the post-game presser with Todd just said that this is one of the best games that he's had. Or he's playing some of the best hockey that he has for this team. So it's going to piss some people off, and I'm okay with that.
It doesn't piss me off. I think that's perfectly fine. James, your honorable mention?
I'm going to go honorable mention. I got to back this mic up because I got to say, Trevor Moore!
Backing the mic up didn't seem to really do anything on my end, but I appreciate the effort.
I try to do like those musicians, like, woo. I want to say that I love watching someone develop in front of your eyes and seeing him insert himself and be more creative. And quite frankly, that goal, assumably off the goalie's mask, sharp angle goal, is just some of the things that he's been showing. But he's been showing up a lot lately. It's no surprise that he's leading the scoring charts, and I just can't wait to see more from him.
How do you feel about the new nickname?
The Raven?
Yeah. The Raven?
Yeah.
I get it. I understood it.
I didn't ask you if you understood it. I'm asking how you feel about it.
I love any nickname. Right. I'm a Navy guy. Nicknames are ours.
I
Bing.
Thanks, James. I gotta put a guitar sound in there now. I also love it. And I love that you guys went unconventional and a different route than I went, because I'm going with Vladislav Gavrikov, who missed five games with an injury, comes in three games, only one goal allowed while he's on the ice, stepped right back into his old spot, didn't miss a beat, and and brought the locker room dancing and everything else that he brings. I think it was, I can't remember if it was the first game or maybe it was the Vegas game, but it was like he just had a play in the neutral zone where he just sort of effortlessly took the puck off a guy's stick. It must have been San Jose because it was early when he came back, and I just went like, yeah, he's back. No problem.
In the game before he comes back, he's in the tunnel in a Christmas suit, dancing for everybody, like truly becoming part of the heart of the team. So,
yeah. So that's my honorable mention.
That was really cool of him to get Daryl's guy for his suit, you know?
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
It's actually a girl.
That was great.
Her name is...
A lady.
Yeah.
Okay,
perfect. She's great. All right, so then, Jordan, you're a runner-up.
I'm going to go a little boring here. Not boring, but I feel like it's a pretty obvious choice. But I'm going to go with Kopitar. 3 points this week. The only other player that has at least a point per game this week, plus four. One goal, two assists, just always constant. You know, quote-unquote aging Kopitar. He just goes out there and does it and still just makes it look easy. And I think it's an easy second choice.
Yeah, he is having himself a great season, had himself a great week. I think that's a sound pick. James, I'm assuming you're going the same route.
I'm going unconventional.
Oh.
And I'm not even going to go with the player. I want to nominate the Kings PK.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody's nominated a special team before. Yeah, but
no, it has.
Okay. I think this week, shutting down a 5-3 on Edmonton, just continuing to when the power play is not hitting, but the PK is locking it down, keeps the Kings in the game. I feel like that's been a lot of work that's been put in over the years, and this week for some reason for me it showed a lot, and it was one of the things that stood out this week. So I'm going Kings PK.
Todd McLellan has had a lot of praise for the penalty kill and has spent a lot of time talking about Blake Lizotte and Trevor Lewis. I'm vamping right now as I try and quickly look up a stat on the penalty kill for this week. But yeah, the penalty kill has been great all year, and this week it definitely came through. I find it interesting, though, James, that you're bringing up the penalty kill when I take it back. Andre Kopitar didn't have the most time on the penalty kill in this three games. Deneau had 4 minutes, 28 seconds. Trevor Moore had 4 minutes and 3 seconds. Andre Kopitar, 4 minutes and 1 second. He and Kempe, actually the only forwards on the team who were on the ice when a power play goal was scored against the team in these three games. So interesting that you would ignore Andre Kopitar and praise the penalty kill. But I think that's a solid pick. But I told you guys, I warned you guys beforehand, there is a wholly scientific or completely scientific and always accurate, I forget the language I use, point system. So by choosing the PK, you are abdicating your points in this round, and I get to distribute them the way I want to. I'm giving them to Kopitar because he was also my runner. That is the correct, objectively correct pick.
I'm undefeated at being wrong, so I'm happy with that.
It's a skill, man. It's a skill. I'm happy with but yeah, a goal and two assists, and the one goal came by going straight to the net, a plus four, which I don't think can be ignored. And I'm going to talk to Jack Jablonski about this later in this episode, but it's replacing plus minus as my new personal hangup. And that is faceoff percentage, because Andre Kopitar is very, very good at faceoffs, but I am assured by highly respected members of the analytics community that faceoffs don't matter, that they're just another puck battle in a sequence of hundreds of puck battles, and that we just place out, you know, overloaded importance on them because they're isolated and because you can see them. I understand that the people who are making these arguments to me have spent a lot of time thinking about these arguments, and these arguments are based in principles and research that I do not have the time or the patience to understand. Having said all that, I think they're wrong, because I can watch a game and see a goal scored off of a faceoff or a goal scored against you off of a faceoff. So the fact that Anže Kopitar is very good at faceoffs still factors in, even though, like I said, there's a part of me that feels like I'm wrong for caring about it.
Yeah, that just kind of blew my mind, like that they put that little weight on faceoff percentage. And I would love to be a fly on that wall in a room of conversation that I probably don't understand.
It's basically just me saying nuh-uh, and then them saying a bunch of really intelligent stuff, and then me scratching my head and going, yeah, but nuh-uh. I understand that objectively they're probably right, but nuh-uh, because I can see it. That brings us to our King of the Week. Jordan, we're going to start with you, and if we don't all agree on this, you guys are never coming back on.
Is his name Adrian Kempe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
James,
okay.
James, you're going to have to agree with this here.
Adrian Kempe! Yeah,
the juice!
Yeah, I mean, yeah. What was it? 1 point something, over a point and a half per game, I believe it was.
Yeah,
1.3. Yeah. Okay, there you go. 5 points, 3 goals, 2 assists. It's the answer is correct because the answer is correct.
Yeah. And he's on, I think it's points in 4 games now, which doesn't count because we're just looking at 3 games. But talking about his season in general, sorry, James, if you wanted to weigh in, don't let me cut you off here.
Yep.
All right. So he's called a streaky player. And This is another one of those things like the faceoffs where I get annoyed because it doesn't mean anything to me, because a streaky player, unless you're a point per game player, in which case you're probably scoring a point per game or a few points every other game, then yeah, there's going to be stretches where you don't have points. So if you're a point and a, you know, if you're half a point per game player, unless you are point, no point, point, no point, point, no point, right? Like literally scoring 1 point every other game.
Right.
Then there's bound to be stretches where you have some points in a stretch of games and then you don't in another one.
Yeah.
Adrian Kempe's on pace for, I think, close to a point per game. I actually should know this off the top of my head. I think he's at like 30 something points in 33 games, maybe 31 points in 33 games. And I understand that he hasn't scored in every, he's 33 points in 33 games. So,
yep.
There you have
it. Right on the money.
Yeah. And I asked him and I asked Todd McClellan about, you know, this notion of him getting on streaks and whatever. I've never understood it. Good players score points, and I've never bothered to sit there and count how many games it's been for a player to score or not score. The thing that bothers me the most is my highly scientific and always accurate King of the Week standings. Adrian Kempe is not near the top. And that was starting to sort of bother me. He's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7th in single-digit points. And Quentin Byfield is leading the way with 32 points. So that was starting to freak me out, that Adrian Kempe, who has been near the top of the team and scoring all year long. But that just shows sort of how not streaky he's been, because there was never one week where he grabbed everybody's attention. He's just been quietly putting up the points. This week he's grabbing the attention. This week he's getting all the
accolades,
incredibly scientific and always accurate King of the Week points.
I do feel like a lot of people that make the argument that he is streaky are only paying attention to the goals and not the assist that he puts up on the board.
I think that's totally fair. He's gotten a lot of praise this year about becoming a quote unquote more complete player. And I think we're definitely seeing that. And I think the emergence of Quentin Byfield has helped him and helped Anže Kopitar. You know, there was some talk about, well, Kempe, you know, he's only on pace for 20-something goals after scoring 30-something and 40-something. I said, I don't care. He's on pace for – he's a point-per-game player.
Yeah.
Because Anže Kopitar is having a, you know, a career season. Well, maybe not career, because I don't know if he's on pace to – I think he had 92 that year that he should have won the Hart Trophy and was robbed. And Quentin Byfield's having a breakout. So I don't particularly care how the points are distributed amongst those three.
Yeah.
They're coming. The goals are coming from those three guys.
So. Yeah.
The way it should.
I think we're seeing with this season, it's not about individual accolades. It's about the whole team. Like, the whole team is playing well as a unit. And that's what matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, which is, it's annoying. It's not annoying. It's great. But for years, I have been saying stuff like, I don't care how many points Anže Kopitar gets. The only numbers I get are wins and losses. But now we do have some players on the team who, for whatever reason, are expected to put up numbers. And I'm finding myself relying on that argument. And even though it's not a deviation from form, from what I've said in the past, for whatever reason this year, it feels weirder to say like, well, I don't care how many goals, you know, player X scores. It's about the wins. Or David Riddick, you know, said after his first performance against the Sharks when they lost the shutout late in the game. And he said, they don't pay me for shutouts. They pay me to win hockey.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Right. Right. That's the actual distribution of the, unlike baseball, where there's no salary cap, in hockey, you have a salary cap and you have X amount of dollars. It doesn't matter which part of the team is generating. I've forced my way into your guys' show and made this argument before.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which part of the machine is producing the energy. The machine as a whole costs what it costs.
Right.
And there's a cap on how much you can spend on it. And the team performs the way it performs. And that's ultimately the only thing we should be concerned with. But having said that, Adrian Kempe is the king of the week. So congratulations, Adrian Kempe. This week's king of the week. I saved me. Actually saved me in an editing thing there, James, because I was going to put in the brass, but I'll leave in the reggaeton.
So James's plus minus is sitting at like equal right now.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. Before I let you guys go, where can people find your podcast?
We're at on all the socials at King's Realm Pod. Come check us out. We're also we, like Jesse said, record Wednesday nights live 10:30. You can find that on Twitch or Twitter at King's Realm Pod. So come check us out. You can also leave a voicemail 562-317-0087. Say whatever you want. It's an explicit show. We don't have trumpets. We don't have all the fancy stuff.
The guitar riffs.
Yeah. but no, we love to hear your opinions because we like to talk, to the fans and find out what people feel about the games or whatever's going on with the team.
It is an explicit show. We should mention that.
Yeah, it is. It's not family friendly.
No, I would not listen to it while you're driving your kids to work or to school.
Or with grandma.
Probably shouldn't be driving them to work either.
Well, look, they got to learn sometime. And I do want to say this, James, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Have you guys seen the meme of the three-headed dragon, and there's two dragons that look very stern and serious, and the third head has the crossed eyes with the tongue out?
I'm curious to know who you think that is.
No, I feel like we need a four-headed dragon, because James and Mikey Alexander are cut from such similar cloth. And I really shouldn't have time for either one of them, but I adore both of them. So I just want to toss that out there for New Year's, James. You're in the same category for me as Mikey Alexander.
Hey, that is an honorable mention if there ever was one. It's I'll tell you what, he is an idol to my kids. So he's a good guy, and
that makes
everybody
sense.
There's hundreds of people that want to see him at a game every game, and there's no mystery behind that. He's just an awesome guy.
So I know you're listening, Mikey Alexander. So here's your shout out. You can play this for your mom. Everybody loves you.
Love you, buddy. Hey, before we go, New Year's resolution for you.
A New Year's resolution. All right. I wasn't really planning on sharing this information with a lot of people, but what the heck. I discovered over the last year or so that I've become really, really boring. Because hockey used to be my hobby. Mm-hmm. Doing the podcast used to be sort of my social life, my recreational life, my entertainment life. And now it's become my professional life. And I can't really do it as a hobby or socially anymore.
Okay.
So when I go to dinner parties or when I'm talking to family or when I'm introducing myself to people and the question comes up like, oh, so what do you do? And I say, well, I work for the Los Angeles Kings and I blah, 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 blah. And they go like, yeah, but like, what do you do in your spare time? What do you do for fun?
I just told you.
And I go, yeah. nothing. I look at stat charts and I worry about recording equipment. And I don't know. So, I was speaking to a member of the LA Kings casually in the locker room one day, and they asked me what it is that I do for fun in my spare time. And I had to have that moment where I went, Nothing. And I won't say which player it was, but it was the only player on the team whose opinion of me that I might possibly care about.
Got it.
And
you know.
Yeah. And if you dunno, then you better figure it out. And I was so mortified and so embarrassed that I like had nothing, that I was like, yeah, I got nothing. That I went home and made a purchase that I've been thinking about for a long time. It's been sitting in my Amazon browsing history for a long time. I bought myself a bass guitar.
Oh, ooh, that's cool.
And I have not yet started to learn how to play it. But yeah, in an attempt to impress a professional hockey player 15 years younger than me. Because he really won't care whether I do or don't. Yeah, so my New Year's resolution this year is to
learn the bass.
Learn the bass. Yeah, I've already got stickers all over it.
Man, you went for the moon. You went super cool.
Man, I'm so boring now. Like, all I can do is yell at you guys about Ted Lasso and the Kings. And that's not a personality. So,
well, yeah. Once
Carla is picking up the drums, you're picking up the bass.
Yeah, we're a rhythm section.
That's what I was going to say. You guys are going to have to jam together.
Yeah. I used to play an instrument when I was younger. So theoretically, it should be possible.
Yeah. But yeah. I just broke out the sax. I haven't played in 25 years.
I played the saxophone when I
was there. You go. Now we're talking. Jordan, what do you got?
Kind of boring, but to grow the business that I just started. So
I thought you were going to say grow a beard, and I was like, there, brother.
No. It could be a little fuller, to be honest. Yeah. It does go well with the new mullet that I just got. So, I just started a new business. Want to, you know, focus on growing on that and kind of take it from there.
All right. Well, good luck with that. James, I guess we have to ask you what yours is.
No, I'm going to learn to budget this year.
Ooh.
A, yeah, I don't believe you, and B, good luck.
If you know me, you know that has never been in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
I'm going to budget a little more.
Okay.
So that's it. Be a little more responsible. I guess time to 47 to grow up.
Well, for Mrs. Whitlock and the Whitlockings,
Whitlockings.
I wish you the best.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining me, fellas. Everybody check out. Oh, and Dennis is not here. So you guys, if you want, you can make fun of Dennis for missing this opportunity.
You should. Yeah. If this was our podcast, we'd tell you he's dead. But
Yeah.
Well, rest in peace, Dennis. Thanks, boys.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you soon.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. A few weeks ago, we brought Jack Jablonski in. Pardon me for stumbling on your name there, Jack. We brought Jack Jablonski in to take a look ahead at 7 Pacific Division teams that the Kings were going to play. That stretch of games is over, but I enjoyed listening back to that preview of upcoming games so much that for 2024, this is the first episode of the new year. This will go out on New Year's Day. Jack, we're going to have you come in once a week, and we're going to take a look at the games ahead, and we're going to have you walk us through a preview. So in the upcoming week, the Kings have games against the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Detroit Red Wings, and then the Washington Capitals, because for the purposes of all the Kings men, the week ends on Sunday, begins on Monday and ends on Sunday. So let's start with Toronto. What can you tell us about the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess first, Happy New Year to you,
Jesse. Yeah, Happy New Year. Sorry, I should have given you a little
intro. And all the listeners as well. Yeah, man, Toronto, what an interesting team. So obviously it'll be the second of the two games against each other this year. I think, as you'll remember, early in the season, we had an impressive win in Toronto on Halloween, actually. So, you know, Toronto's really interesting, and it starts with the goaltending, but I will get to that in a second. They've lost 5 of 6, actually, right now. Mm. They've also given up an average of 5.4 goals against in those losses. So a team that's, you know, 3-4-3 in their last 10. So they're still picking up points. They're sitting in the middle. They're in the playoffs, but they're, you know, again, for Toronto fans, not where they want to be, that's for sure. The goaltending situation is interesting, Jesse. I mean, they just put Ilya Samsonov on waivers today. He has the second worst save percentage in the NHL among qualified goalies. Martin Jones was called up on emergency, so now he's their starting goaltender after being sent down to start the season with the Marlies. But he's what 4-3 in the last in his seven starts this season. And their young, you know, likely goalie of the future, Joseph Woll, he's on IR, he's injured. And granted, he's been kind of their savior in net, but they're without him right now. He was 8-5-1, 9.16 save percentage, and actually ranked second in goals saves or goals saved above expected. So they'll be without them. And then I think the big thing when it comes to Toronto versus the Kings is it's actually a battle of the strengths. So I had four of them here that I wrote down. You know, when it comes to the strengths is the face-off circle. So the Kings, and I think this is actually really interesting, the Kings are ninth in the NHL with a 51.2 face-off win percentage, while the Leafs are sixth with a 53.6. But the last time we did this was before the seven divisional games. The Kings have the second best face-off win percentage since we last talked, and that's 57%.
Interesting.
So they're doing well in that category. That's the one strength.
I'm gonna call timeout right here because I'm gonna draw a dividing line between the strengths and the rest of them, because, and we can have this conversation now. Face-offs is something that, do you know the Monty Hall problem?
Nope.
All right. So I suck at math. I hate math. I find all conversations about math inherently boring and terrible. However, this is a perfect reason why. So I'm going to try and remember it. I may pull up the Wikipedia page. I swear this will be relevant to face-offs in a second.
Okay.
The Monty Hall problem is something, it's like a riddle that people will tell you, and then they'll say, oh, you'll never expect the answer, and then they'll tell you, and you'll go, yeah, that's wrong. This is just not true. And they'll go, no, because math. And you don't know math, I don't know math, and I'll go like, I don't care how much I don't know math. This is just categorically untrue. So here it is. You have three doors. You can, behind two doors are goats, and behind one door is a car. You pick a door. Let's say you pick door number one. I go and I say, okay, I'm going to open door number three, and behind door number three is a goat. So now that we know that behind door number one or two is a car and behind the other door is a goat, you have an opportunity to change your answer.
Mm-hmm.
You've chosen door one. Do you want to switch to door two or switch to door one? You know, okay. So the answer is yes, you do want to change, because if you keep your original choice, you have a 1/3 chance of being right. But if you change, you have a 2/3. I can't remember exactly how it works out.
50-50.
But it works out to being the opposite of what you would think it would be. And then when you say your answer, the person who knows the answer goes, aha, you're wrong because math. And then they explain it to you and you go, nah, it's not true. I don't care about goats or cars or doors. I've done a really poor job of explaining the Monty Hall problem. The point is, face-offs, if you talk to anybody in the analytics world, they will tell you that face-offs don't matter. That they're just one of hundreds of puck battles that occur during the course of a game, and that we shouldn't put extra focus on faceoffs because, you know, they take place in a very, you know, isolated setting. You can see the puck battle rather than net front battles or corner battles or open ice 50-50s, whatever. I hear that from the analytics department, and they can explain to me why faceoffs don't matter. And then I'll watch a game, and I'll see my team lose a faceoff in the defensive zone in overtime and then lose the game off of that faceoff. And I'll go, I'm sorry, faceoffs are important. I don't care what the math says. I don't care what decades of research tell me. Like, my eyeballs tell me that faceoffs matter. I'm assuming you agree with me on this one.
I do agree. I think the stat itself, when it comes to like, oh, Sidney Crosby leads the NHL in faceoff wins or faceoff, you know, percentage. Mm-hmm. It's a team stat. You know, like you said, it's, you know, how many times in the game does someone win it cleanly? Yes, it absolutely happens. But also, how many times is it just a 50-50 battle and the wing comes in and, you know, after 3 seconds of, you know, a scrum, it ends up on your team's stick? So I think it's an interesting stat in terms of if you're going to reward one person for it. But I do agree that it's extremely important stat, given that that team starts with the puck and you don't. So, you know, you can spend the next 20 seconds trying to get the puck if you lose the draw.
Somebody from our analytics department was talking to me about this and said, okay, pull up the standings from last year. And I said, all right, fine, I will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they said, all right, you know, find me a bad team with a good faceoff percentage. And I said, okay, the Chicago Blackhawks were sixth overall in points. and had a 52.7 faceoff percentage. And they were like, you know, who won the Stanley Cup last year? And like Vegas was like, did they have the best faceoff percentage? Like, no. But to me, it comes down to the question that I was asking Todd McClellan about last week, which is power plays, penalty kills, faceoffs, all of these things. And I swear we'll get back to your strengths in a second. Apologies. To me, it's about timing, but that matters, right? If you lose a crucial faceoff, that matters.
Six
more.
On five, extra yeah. man. Yeah.
And maybe we just need to start tracking faceoffs differently. Anyway, all right, your second strength. Sorry, I totally derailed your thing.
All good. Second strength, special teams. Leafs mm-hmm. power play, seventh in the NHL. Obviously, Kings first in penalty kill.
Yep.
You know, looking at 25%, you know, success rate for the Leafs, and then obviously an 86.5 kill rate for the Kings. So that is number two. Number three, and I think this is my biggest one, slot shots. So did some research. NHL ranks number one in the NHL in slot shots, Austin Matthews.
Hmm.
Number two in the NHL, John Tavares. They're second line. And then number five in the NHL, William Nylander, is in slot shots with 85. So 101, 100, and then 85 slot shots, while the Kings rank number one in the NHL in slot shots allowed, averaging just 10 a game. So who wins that battle? Obviously, I think that can be quite a telling answer. And then, you know, Leafs are very run and gun, offense heavy, defense not so much. You know, they're fourth in the league in goals for. Obviously, the Kings lead the NHL in goals against, averaging just 2.3 a game. So those are my battle of the strengths. And then just from a personnel perspective, you know, William Nylander tied for fourth in the NHL in points with 48. Ironically, I feel like this always happens in Toronto. It's a contract year for him. So good luck in the salary cap moving forward. Mm-hmm. Austin Matthews leads the NHL with 29 goals in 33 games. Just, you know, Jesse, I know you're not a math guy. That's a 71 goal season he's on mm-hmm. pace for. And then obviously Mitch Marner, 38 points for him. So that's what we got against Toronto. You know, it seemed that the Kings' strategy in their first game against them worked out really well. Obviously, the Kings play a great road game, and that was evident up in Toronto on Halloween. So round two this season will be coming up quite soon, and that's what we've got.
I heard somebody ask, I can't remember. Might have been on Merrick and Friedman on 32 Thoughts, but somebody was asking if Austin Matthews doesn't have a better shot at breaking Gretzky's record than Ovechkin, now that Ovechkin has had one season of slowing down.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Well, you got to keep it up for about another 15 seasons,
yeah,
and then we'll
exactly.
talk about it.
Yeah. All right, so that's Toronto. That is on Tuesday, January 2nd, and the next game is January 4th against the Detroit Red Wings. What do we know about Detroit?
Yeah, Detroit. Interesting in a different way. So obviously we've got, you know, if you're playing against the East Coast teams, two games a year, one on the road, one at home. First game against them, obviously Thursday. We'll be in Detroit on the 13th next week. So we'll see these guys twice in a span of, I'm not a math guy, what is it, the fourth? 9 days. Mm-hmm. But you know, 7-0 in their last 10 games. And I think this is what's so interesting. So Patrick Kane signs with the Detroit Red Wings on November 29th. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Everything, you know where this is going?
I think I do, but continue.
Okay. So he signs with them, but he doesn't play his first game until the 7th of December.
Mm-hmm.
Now on the 6th of December, before he plays his first game, they're 14-7-3. They sat third in the Atlantic Division, you know, with a good margin between them and the outside of the playoffs. Patrick Kane comes in. They've gone 3-8-1 since, and now they are currently 2 points out of the playoffs. Yeah. Now, you know, you can argue subtraction by addition, to each their own. You've got Patrick Kane on your team. He's put up 13 points in his 12 games, but the team has obviously taken a step back. So pretty interesting in the aspect of what these guys have done. They've got a good goalie in Ville Husso, though. Who came over from St. Louis 2 years ago. He's kind of solidified their goaltending. And then Alex DeBrincat, obviously Patrick Kane's former teammate in Chicago. They trade for him in the offseason, send former King draft pick Dominique Kubalik over to Ottawa. And DeBrincat's come over, and he's got 37 points leading the team in that category, as well as power play goals. So Something to look out for. Obviously, DeBrincat is one of those guys who is in that Ovechkin-esque area on the power play. He had a nice power play goal, I believe, a game or two ago in that exact one-time role. So Detroit, man, it's really interesting because they've gotten worse by getting better in terms of personnel. So, you know, ruffles in the locker room, who knows?
There's a bunch of teams in the East that I feel like they're at where the Oilers were about 11 years ago, where it was like, oh, is this year? Is this their year? Excuse me.
And they just kept drafting third.
Yeah, it's like it's Detroit, Buffalo, and Ottawa, where I feel like everybody had high expectations, and obviously Detroit's higher in the standings than Buffalo and Ottawa. Ottawa's got to be at this point the most disappointing team in the league.
As far as what their actual expectations were.
But Detroit, you know, you mentioned that they're 2 points out of a playoff spot. They're also only 1 point behind Tampa. And like, I would never count
put them ahead of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't count Tampa out. Now, I don't know Detroit's roster as intimately as I know the Lightning's, obviously, because the Lightning's have had a lot of success. But, you know, Tampa's a -7 in goal differential, Detroit's a +6. But they also have Pittsburgh and New Jersey and Washington ahead of them. Just talking about teams that are sort of either on the cusp or fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah, they've got three teams between themselves and the last wild card. So it's a tight little area when it comes to who's going to get into that playoff. And granted, we've got more than half of the season left. But when you're looking at, you know, quote unquote projections, you've got to assume Tampa finds their footing and works their way up. You know, Pittsburgh with their roster is obviously talented. So it's an interesting area that, you know, Detroit sits in. They obviously loaded up by getting Patrick Kane in terms of the belief that, you know, that could be that final piece that can help them push them into a solidifying playoff spot. But they've obviously taken a few steps backward as a team when it comes to their record since he's joined.
They have such a weird roster to me, though. It's like DeBrincat, in my mind, is still a Blackhawk.
He's not. He's on his third team.
No, I know, but he's so young, and yet he's had the career of somebody I would expect. Like, if you laid out DeBrincat's career path and told me it was Andreas Athanasius, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that sounds about right. But he's like 25, and he's leading the team in scoring. Like, he's a good player. Dylan Larkin, to me, feels like he should be in his early 20s. He's 27. Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider are, as far in my mind, they've still just been drafted, even though this is Seider's three years out,
I think. Yeah.
Shane Gostisbehere is just the defensive version of DeBrincat, only he is 30. He's not 25. Daniel Sprong feels to me like I feel like I saw Daniel Sprong's name in NHL 15, the EA Sports game. JT Compher, I feel like, has been on a bunch of different teams. Andrew Kopp.
JT Compher has been on one team in his career.
Is that okay? So there you go. Like
Colorado, said, yeah.
To me, it's just a weird. Robbie Fabry, wasn't he a Blue for a while? On the Blues?
He was a Blue.
David Perron was a, you know, has
also
been
a Blue.
But like twice, right? Or maybe three times, David?
St. Louis, Vegas, back to St. Louis.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Patrick Kane, obviously, is Patrick Kane. Jeff Petrie was in Montreal for ages. Ben Chiarot, wasn't he also in Montreal?
Montreal, then went to Florida at the deadline, I think.
Yeah, Christian Fisher, you know, is sort of like a mid-20s. And then Olli Maatta. There's like, it's like a roster full of Olli Maattas. Where I go, all right, he started with one team. He got a reputation. Gostisbehere, DeBrincat, Fabry, Perron, Kane, Petri, Schrott, Maatta. They're all like on their third or fourth team. And in my mind, they're all still, you know, wearing the jersey of the team they originated with. And then you've got Moritz Seider, who's like the poster child for surprising draft hits, right? Because didn't he go sixth overall or something?
But
I remember it's rare that I even remember a guy going in the top 10 and everybody's jaw hitting the floor and going, Moritz Seider in the sixth overall. That's an incredible reach. And then it paid off. I guess when I look at the roster and I hear people talk about the Eiser plan, I just look at it and I go, what exactly is the plan? Like, just sort of taking a giant ladle and scooping out a bunch of relatively talented players from teams that don't know. It's a wild team to me. I never understand what the Red Wings are up to.
Well, Thursday we've got the
Detroit we'll find out. I guess.
The Detroit Only Models versus the Los Angeles Kings on Thursday. They're a high scoring team. They're third in the NHL in scoring. So if you can shut that down, granted, if you can shut down anyone's scoring, you can win a game. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, Jesse.
Talking about shutting down scoring on Sunday, January 7th, the LA Kings head out onto the road for the first game in a 6-game road trip against the Washington Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin, who has 7 goals this year.
Yeah, nation's capital. You know, again, I think this is like such an anomaly. You know, they're 17-11-6. They hold the final spot in the wild card in the Eastern Conference, but they have a goal differential of minus 18, which is the third worst in the conference.
I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but they are not, unless that goal differential significantly improves, they are getting passed by either the Devils, the Lightning, the Penguins, the Red Wings, if not all four of them.
But they're also not healthy. So Pacioretty's skating. Max Pacioretty, who tore his, I believe, his Achilles again in Carolina after coming back from it. So that sucks. You never wish for injuries on anyone. Pacioretty's skating. So I don't know exactly when he's coming back. You know, he's on LTIR. They've got $19 million wrapped up in injured reserve. Now, 9 of it comes from Nicholas Backstrom, who's essentially retired. But then you've got TJ Oshie, who's also injured. And then you've got Sonny Milano, another middle six guy who can provide a lot of offense and kind of plays like Trevor Zegras. So, you know, if they get healthy, who knows? And then obviously Ovi only has 7 goals this season, but leads the team in assists. Bet you didn't think that was going to come out of my mouth.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the last meeting. Obviously, the Kings lost to them 2-1 in a very Washington-esque game, given their style of play this year. The most dangerous line has been their Alexi Protas. Now, shout out Zach Dooley on not knowing how to spell Alexi. Just copies and pastes because it's impossible. Sure. Sorry to throw you under the bus there, Duels.
I mean, in his defense,
I'll give you a shot.
You're looking at it, you cheater. It's A-L-I-A-K-S-E-I, which is nonsense.
Seen that coming. But Alexi Protas, Connor McMichael, and Anthony Mantha, as Kings fans will remember, that line scored both goals against the Kings, and all three of them were in on each of the goals. So that's the line to look out for, crazy to say. And ironically, their power play is atrocious, 30th in the NHL, which you just never thought you'd hear from a Alex Ovechkin power play. But they're without Oshie. Obviously, they don't have the playmaker in Backstrom. You're looking at Kuznetsov has not had the same season. He's been a healthy scratch earlier in the year. I believe it was actually in Anaheim the day after the game after the Kings played. But the interesting thing here is goaltending. It's looking like you're going to get a Darcy Kemper because Charlie Lindgren, who held the Kings to 1 goal on 40 shots, just got injured. Now, by this time, Saturday, come next week, he could be back, but undetermined given what their staff has said. But he leads the NHL in save percentage. He's leading the league in slot save percentage. He also leads the league in goals saved above expected per game. But again, he did get injured on the 29th, I believe. So something that Kings fans will have to look out for when it comes to who's in net. So, you know, this is a Washington team that struggles to score, plays a very conservative game, dump and chase, try to use their physicality with Ovechkin and Tom Wilson, and just very much tries to play that 3-2 game circa 2008. So, yeah.
If the Washington Capitals don't pay for and build or erect, I suppose, a statue of Evgeny Kuznetsov at some point in the near future, then Alex Ovechkin needs to pay for it himself, because without Kuznetsov, they don't win the Stanley Cup back in 2018.
He was unbelievable in their playoff run.
And our entire perspective on the Alex Ovechkin, Backstrom, Holtby, Carson era, not Carson. Who's their defenseman?
Carlson.
Carlson, thank you.
John Carlson.
Close. Our perspective on that whole era is totally different.
Yeah.
But they did it. Kuznetsov dragged that team kicking and screaming to its first Stanley Cup. So good for them. I was going to say I want to see how many goals Alex Ovechkin has scored in games where Backstrom was not available to play with him. But then I quickly looked it up, and his first two seasons in the NHL, there was no Backstrom, and he scored something like 90 goals. So it's obviously not just that. But I'm biased against Alex Ovechkin. Everybody knows that.
I'm biased for him. So
yeah, no, I listen.
We even it out on the pod. We're a net neutral Alex Ovechkin podcast.
So two of these three games are at home, the second and the fourth. The seventh, that's the game against the Capitals, is the first on a road trip. We'll talk to you again after that game to preview the next week's slate of games. Jack, any thoughts now that we're at the New Year's Eve episode of the show? We're not really at the halfway mark for the Kings. There's still about five games left before we hit. Is it five? Is it seven? We're at 33, so nine games left. But we're about a third of the way through the season. Any thoughts on the Kings season so far?
Yeah, good question. I think, you know, when you looked at this roster going into the season, you know, mm-hmm. there were two question marks that I think a lot of fans needed answers to, or that I felt were going to heavily determine the way the season went. And that was, you know, the third defensive pair and the goaltending. Mm-hmm. Now, Cam Talbot started off as good as anyone could have hoped, predicted, whatever, you know, term you want to say. Has he regressed to the mean? A little bit, but he's still playing outstanding hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's been a great fill-in. You know, obviously Copley struggled to start the year, found his footing a little bit, and then obviously now he's on IR. So, you know, his timeline, who knows what that'll be moving forward. Rittich, you know, we still don't know what we've gotten Rittich, given that he's played two games and both of them have been in games against the San Jose Sharks where he's barely seen the puck. So, you know, something to keep an eye on, in my opinion, is his performances and frankly, the strategy that goes behind when they see him. You know, is it going to be against the San Jose's, or is he going to get games, you know, that are up against the top teams in the division? Of course, you know, we're going to try to put Cam Talbot out there with the belief that he is, you know, that guy. And frankly, he is that guy for us this year. So that's the other one. I think, you know, when you look at that third D pair, I think England has been extremely good for what we had hoped. You know, he struggled a little bit in the last few games in terms of being on the ice for goals against. But on the other side, you've got Jordan Spence, who's been outstanding. You know, he's, I think, second on the Kings defense and assists or points wise behind Doughty. So, you know, nothing short of, you know, happiness when it comes to my expectation level with Spence. And then, you know, from the offensive side, you know, I'm stoked with what we're seeing in Byfield, the confidence that he's playing with and what he's been able to do to kind of solidify that top line as a true threat when it comes to, you know, each position. That's great. When it comes to, you know, the penalty kill, you know, couldn't be happier, because I don't think we ever expected to be first in the NHL after what we saw last year. So the improvements are great. I think they've exceeded my expectations. I think if this team stays healthy, whenever Arvidsson comes back, you get, you know, healthy in other areas. You kind of get some lines once everyone is playing. This team can absolutely make a threat across the Western Conference and can make a run. No question about it.
You know, I didn't realize it, but I was looking at it right now in the Pacific Division, looking at points percentage, the Kings are in first place.
Yeah. I mean, they're a few games behind and, you know, eventually they're going to catch up. Now you can always say, well, they're a few games behind, so the point percentage is first. So we should be first. But again, when we're playing every other day, you know, sometimes that can catch up to you as well. So, you know, I agree. I think, you know, when it looks at point percentage, but then again, we have to be careful because
you have to win the games you have in hand for sure.
You've got four games against against Vancouver, and we've struggled head to head against Vancouver. Both Pettersson and Besser have career numbers and ungodly numbers against the Kings. So, you know, obviously a team that is as defensively sound as the Kings have been playing, you hope that, you know, kind of comes back to the mean. But, you know, it's a situation where the Kings have put themselves in a position where they can very much can control their own destiny. You know, they don't see Vegas anymore. They've got a handful of games against the Pacific Division, as do other teams in the Pacific that you should win against teams that we feel are inferior. So, you know, they're playing good hockey. Todd has them playing a good brand of hockey, and the systems that they've got are working.
It's fun. There's two things you mentioned that that triggered memories for me. One is Talbot, because at the beginning of the season when he was acquired, there was a whole lot of talk about how many games can you play? Who's the starter? You know, what's going to happen, the rotation? And I think it was in game two, they put Copley in, and Todd McLellan spoke to the media and he said, you know, we talked to Cam Talbot and we told him, even if he had a 60 save shutout in game one, we were going to Copley in game two. Meanwhile, Cam Talbot's played 24 of the 33 games, which by my math is a 60 game starting pace. And at the start of the season, he was asked, I think by Dennis Bernstein, you know, can you play 55 games or 60 games? And he put it in that range. So currently on pace. But like you said, since Compley's gone down and Riddick has come up, the only two games Riddick has played are against San Jose. And I'm pretty sure we don't play San Jose 30 more times.
I think I don't think either game he got more than 20 shots on.
Yeah.
That, so.
But someone's going to have to play somebody besides San Jose instead of Cam Talbot. So,
yeah. And again, you know, they brought Riddick in to be this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he feels he's an NHL goaltender. He has experience.
He is statistically. And
he's been in the NHL every single season the last X amount of years.
Yeah.
So the guy, it's not like you're coming up and bringing up a guy who is a total wild card. The guy has experience. He's played in the NHL. He's played behind some really good starters, feels he deserves more time. You know, this is his opportunity. You know, maybe he goes on a run like Cam Talbot did to begin the season. And frankly, in my opinion, I think it's genius on the staff to have him play both of those San Jose games. Guess what? He gives up one goal in each game on, you know, let's say 18, 19 shots, but that's called, you know, confidence. All of a sudden you're seeing the puck. You're not, you know, quote unquote challenged like you would be if you were playing against the, the highest scoring team in the NHL, like Edmonton, for instance. You know, he doesn't get thrown into the fire and isn't put into a tough situation. He gets to kind of find his footing in the NHL, get adjusted to the King system and the way that we play versus, you know, the rain and find that chemistry when it comes to communicating with his defense. So, I think it was a smart play on both, the coaching staff for the Kings. And, hopefully, you know, this is just the beginning of something that, Riddick can make last.
The other one that you mentioned that triggered a memory was you're talking about the third defensive pair.
Yeah.
And in the off season, they brought in Andreas Englund, and there were a lot of conversations about, well, who's going to be the third pair on the left defense. Is it going to be Jacob Muvarari, who's played a bunch? Is it going to be Toby Bjornfoot, who has, I think, over 100 games in the NHL at this point, first round pick? Is it going to be Andreas Englund? And the people who advocated for Englund cited his size, his toughness, his sandpaper, his willingness to fight. Some people singled out the fact that he was decent on the penalty kill. Other people said, well, you want mobility, you want, you know, a higher ceiling, so you want to go with a guy like Bjornfoot with a first-round draft pedigree. But then Todd McLellan has said a number of times early in this season, we being the Kings, acquired Englund for a very specific purpose. We knew what kind of player we were getting. It wasn't, you know, arbitrary. We didn't get him to be a healthy scratch, you know, theoretical fighter. Like, he's basically said, like, we acquired him to play the role that he's playing. We knew what we were doing. And I don't say we knew what we were doing to imply that they were being cocky about it. Like, oh, we knew what we were doing. But to say, like, it was deliberate. It wasn't.
Yeah. We know. No one else does.
Right. But it was like they brought him in. It wasn't a battle in their mind. It wasn't a fight for that spot. They brought him in to play in that spot. They took him to Australia. Like, that was his spot. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I go back to this, Jesse, and I think, you know, you and I started working together on the back end of the Kings era of
yes,
being very good. Yeah. You know, they get swept in against Vegas in 2018 or so, mm-hmm, give or take, and then they obviously go into we're not a re you know,
reimagining, retool. I think was the phrase.
Retool. I think retool was the term. And, you know, there was no depth within the organization. And that's because we had used all of our draft picks to be able to stay good and try to make a run one last time in that era. The Kings go back to the drawing board. You get a bunch of first and second, third round picks. They load up, they stock up. Now the Kings are back to being a team that has great depth. You know, we have multiple players, both forwards and defensemen, you know, that could slot in and play good minutes in the NHL, in my opinion. You've got guys like Toby Bjornfoot. You've got guys like Samuel Fagimo. You've got guys like Alex Turcotte. And the list goes on and on that could truly come up and play good minutes, not, you know, be an outlier to the team. And that's great because guess what? Good teams have that depth. You know, you look at the look at all the teams that have won the Stanley Cup in the last year and look who the healthy scratches were, the guys that couldn't get on the roster because of how good they were. The Kings are building that. And all of a sudden, the Kings have players where, you know, we're not rooting for injuries by any means. But if it does, it opens up an opportunity for a younger guy who has a bright future to step into the lineup. I think Alex LaFerriere is a great example of that. So, you know, it's a matter of taking advantage of the opportunity you're given. Alex LaFerriere, for example, did that. He's still in the NHL 33 games later. So, you know, you look at that, you look at that third D pair, Brandt Clark, I think we can all agree the guy's got a bright future. He's absolutely lighting it up in the AHL.
Yeah, it's
so
ridiculous.
You know, he's waiting. You know, I think he's top five last time I checked in shots on goal, and he's a defenseman. You know, defenseman, he's in the top three for points. You know, the guy's 20 years old and waiting for his opportunity. So the Kings have depth. The Kings have an opportunity, you know, with this roster that's, you know, on the 23 man to be able to make a run. But, you know, God forbid anything happens, they have people that can step in place and still be of value.
Final question for you. I'm not shocked at all, but I'll pretend I'm shocked. Absolutely shocked at how little attention I've paid to the World Junior Championships this year, since we only have one player and he's on Team Finland. And while I find Team Finland a sort of fascinating experiment in constantly meddling, despite not meddling the way that the kids from Scooby-Doo would meddle in other people's affairs, but meddling as in winning medals, despite the fact that nobody ever expects them to, I don't care about Finland. I'm sure it's a lovely country. I've never been there. Yeah. I don't know. So I'm not paying it any attention at all to the World Juniors or you.
A little bit, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I haven't been paying as close of attention because of our lack. Obviously,
we don't have nine prospects.
Yeah. And that's like obviously part of what I do. But no, it's interesting. You know, Team USA is the favorite, which is great. You know, and you flip sides depending on whoever's better. So shame on you. But
I always root for Team Canada unless there are a bunch of Kings prospects playing for Team USA.
Fair enough.
It's a different kind of front running.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. It was an interesting year, and you know, it really is a bummer that Russia is not participating. I feel bad for the kids. Obviously, politically, we know why, and hopefully, everything gets resolved. We'll not go into that. This is that type of podcast.
Different podcast.
But you know, yeah, different podcast. But you know, that said. Without Russia in the World Juniors, Team USA, who had a cakewalk essentially of a pool play, and then it was Finland, Sweden, and Canada all in the other bracket, while the, you know, USA played Slovakia and the Czechs and, you know, Germany or Switzerland or whatever it may be. So, you know, we're about to find out now, given that I believe the first or the second is when quarterfinals start. So it'll be interesting to see, but you know, USA has got the upper advantage when it comes to you know, projections and depth and so on and so forth. So it'll be good, but you know, you can never count Canada out, that's for sure. And as well as the Europeans and Finland and Sweden, because you know, every once in a while, like you said, they medal. Yeah,
Finland pops up with a medal somehow. All right, Jack Jablonski, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you next week.